We're taking a look tonight at the last Mishnah on Pirkei Avos, Perek Gimel. So this is Perek Gimel, Mishnah Chav Gimel, Chapter 3, Mishnah 23. It's the very top of page 564 or 565 in the Art Scroll Hebrew English. Rabbi Lazar ben Chisma Omer. This statement was made by Rabbi Lazar ben Chisma. Kinin upischei nida. The laws concerning bird offerings, particularly those brought by a yoledes, a woman who's just given birth, and pischei nida, the laws that concern the beginnings of menstrual cycles. Without going into this too much, the Torah acknowledges two different types of periods during which a woman's menstrual flow can have an impact on her halachic status. If she experiences a typical menstrual flow, she becomes a nida. And according to Torah law, a nida simply counts 7 days from the beginning of the period, and at the end of 7 days, she goes to mikvah, assuming that sometime, could be even shortly, before she's scheduled to go to mikvah, she stops bleeding. If the woman experiences a menstrual flow during an unusual time, she's deemed to be a zava. A zava, somebody whose flow is unusual, has different halachos. In the case that she becomes a zava for 3 days consecutively, she bleeds for 3 days consecutively as a zava. So at that point, she has to wait for herself, she has to wait to stop bleeding. And she counts Shiva Nikiyim, she counts 7 clean days during which she's not bleeding at all before she goes to the mikvah. As an aside, it's a halacha going back many, many years that women nowadays treat any flow that they experience as having the chumras of both Nida and Zava, and that's why a woman today, universally, regardless of whether she might be technically a Nida or technically a Zava, always waits for the flow to finish, and then, and only then, begins to count 7 clean days before she's able to go to the mikvah. Calculating when the Nida period begins and when the Zava period begins is tricky business. So the Pischei Nida, the beginning of the Nida cycle, which is referenced here in the Mishnah, refers to making the kinds of calculations to figure out when a woman's Zava, her Ziva cycle, has passed and her Nida cycle is beginning again. Again, there's a Mishnah and a Gemara and Masechta Erchin that go through some of the calculations that a person would have to make in order to be able to figure this out. So the laws of kinim, of bird offerings, which are also very complex and involve calculations, when a woman became a yoledes, a new mother, how many different bird offerings she might potentially have to bring given different circumstances. Again, very complex laws that are based on a lot of calculations. Those who have tried to learn the Mishnayos and Masechta Kinim can appreciate the difficult calculations involved. The calculations of Kinim and the calculations of Nida, hein gufei halachos. These are the fundamental, essential halachos. And despite the fact that they're complicated and they're difficult, and one might even say that they're tedious, there's not a lot of lumdus, so to speak, involved. It's not very conceptual. It's a question of working out the equations. Nonetheless, they are gufei halachos. They are essential halachos. Tkufos v'gematrios, when it comes to calculating the celestial cycles, the movements of the planets, the stars, the sun and moon, and gematria, these things are parperos l'chochma. Article translates parperos l'chochma as the seasonings of wisdom. The sense certainly is that these tekufos v'gematrios, calculating these celestial movements, and gematria, we'll define gematria in just a moment, So they are secondary in importance to kinin and pischei nida. Parperes, which is the word which is at the root of parperos, means a dessert. Right? The Chazal used the term parperes in, you know, describing a dessert which would be served at a meal. So whereas kinin and pischei nida, we would say in modern day English, are, so to speak, the meat and potatoes of the meal of Torah, the tekufos and gematrios are nice. They're more like dessert. In other words, they're nice, but they're not essential. They're secondary. They're a nice little, taste that you can have at the end of the meal, but kinin and pischei nida are fundamental. Before we try to analyze this statement, and particularly before we try to define tekufos and gematrios, which is subject to some debate, let's first talk about who this Tano is, Rebbe Elazar ben Chisma, sort of an unusual name you don't encounter all that much. There's a Medrash, the Medrash Rabbah, that relates what this unusual name, Rebbe Elazar ben Chisma, is all about. The word Chisma, on the surface, seems to be related to the word Chasom, which means to muzzle, or to prevent someone from speaking. The Medrash tells us the following interesting story. Rebbe Elazar ben Chisma once went to a certain locale. He was in a certain shul, and they asked him, there's a Medrash Rabbah, by the way, in Parshas Acharemos, Parsha Chav Gimel. They asked Rebbe Elazar ben Chisma to be Poreis al Shma. Halacha is that if you have someone, if you have a group that came late to shul and they missed the original davening, so someone can get up and say Baruch Hu, the first bracha of Shema, sort of do an abbreviated Shema to be motzi those people who didn't catch it the first time around. So apparently something came up in a certain shul. Rebbe Elazar ben Chisma was there, and you know they said, oh, you're a rabbi, why don't you go over and be Poreis al Shema, why don't you, you know, lead the davening? And he didn't know how to do it. They asked him to lead other parts of davening, and he didn't know how to do it. So the people were, kind of looking askance at him. They said to him, Dein Yiskere Rebbe? I thought you were a rabbi. This one they call a rabbi? Where'd you get your smicha? Which cereal box did you find it in? You know, you come to shul, you don't know how to lend Kriya Shema, you don't know how to lead the davening. It's an embarrassment, it's a disgrace. So, you know, Rebbe Elazar ben Chisma found himself embarrassingly muzzled when he came to shul. He wasn't able to do the things that they expected from him. Remember reading, I forget who it was, but one of the recent Svardei Rosh Yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, again within the last couple of decades, who made a point of trying to tell the Bachrim and the Yeshiva that they should become proficient in laning. Why? He said, look, you know, the Svardei communities of a few decades ago were not necessarily so learned in the sense that they didn't necessarily have such grounding in the learning of Gemara and Poskim and the like. But they recognized and they valued people who had shul skills, a person who could lead the davening, a person who could lane, particularly in the Yemenite communities. If you get an aliyah in a Yemenite community, they expect you to actually, you know, read the aliyah itself, not just to make the brachos. So this Svardei Rosh Yeshiva told his talmidim, you know, if you're a ben Torah, you know, the simple Balabata may not really understand what you do all day in yeshiva, but they have a certain respect for your learning. If you're going to come to shul and you're not going to be conversant in the shul skills that they would expect of a regular congregant, and certainly of somebody who's sitting and learning all day, it will cause them to have less respect for people who are learning Torah in general. You know, kind of like the story of Rebbe Elazar ben Chisma. You call yourself a rabbi, you don't even know how to get up there and lead the davening. Dein Yiskere Rebbe. We call this person a rabbi. So in a similar way, this Svardei Rosh Yeshiva advised his talmidim that, you know, whatever else they're learning, they should make sure that when they come to shul, they can get up and perform, you know, in a way which is going to reflect well on the Kavod HaTorah. Anyway, getting back to our story, Rebbe Elazar ben Chisma obviously was very, very embarrassed. Ba'lifnei Rebbe Akiva. So he went to his Rebbe, to Rebbe Akiva. And again, the godless, the greatness of Rebbe Akiva. Rebbe Akiva could have said, oh, you don't know how to be Paris al Shema? There's a bacharel in the back of the yeshiva. He'll teach you how to do it. Rebbe Akiva sat with Rebbe Elazar ben Chisma and he taught him whatever he needed to know in order to, you know, not have performance anxiety next time that he came to the shul. And Rebbe Akiva commented, Ischasem Rebbe Elazar. Or, I'm sorry, the people in shul, the next time he came into shul, and he was able to lead the davening in a proper way, so they said, Ischasem Rebbe Elazar. Rebbe Elazar was strengthened. He became powerful, and it was that same root, chasam, but not in the sense of muzzling the person, but rather that the person became strong. He became strong as a result of his learning. So it's a double play on words. You know, at first he was tongue-tied, but now he's become strong as a result of this experience. And because of that, they called him Rebbe Elazar ben Chisma. It's interesting, the Tosfos Yom Tov, in bringing this medrash, argues that the word ben over here is a misprint. Because Rebbe Elazar ben Chisma implies that his father's name was Chisma. But says the Tosfos Yom Tov, according to this story as told in the Medrash, the reason he was called Rebbe Elazar Chisma was because of some event that happened to him. It wasn't his lineage which was being presented over here. So he says it's not Rebbe Elazar ben Chisma, it's Rebbe Elazar Chisma. And there's literature back and forth. Some agree with the Tosfos Yom Tov, some disagree with the Tosfos Yom Tov. The different girsos, do we include the ben, do we not include the ben? Okay, be that as it may, it is possible to say that he was called ben Chisma, you know, even though his father's name wasn't Chisma, but Chisma was a term that described this particular event that had happened in Rebbe Elazar ben Chisma's life. Okay, so that's one story about Rebbe Elazar ben Chisma. It's interesting though, the Gemara in Masech Taharius, Daf Yud Aleph, tells a different story about Rebbe Elazar ben Chisma, and it's interesting, if you put the two stories together, you get a little bit of a composite sense of who the Tana was. Gemara Horius tells the story of the Nasi Rabban Gamliel, whom we spoke about last night in a different context, who was the head of the Sanhedrin, who was ultimately deposed temporarily, and Rabbi Yoshua ben Hananya, again one of the preeminent Talmidim, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, were once on a ship together. And while they were spending time on that ship, Rabbi Yoshua ben Hananya displayed an incredible knowledge of astronomy and an ability to predict the seasons based on the stars. And Rabban Gamliel was blown away at this scientific knowledge of Rabbi Yeshua ben Hananya. Rabbi Yeshua ben Hananya said, you think that's something? You may not know this, Rabban Gamliel, but you actually have two Talmidim back in the Beis Medrash who, in the words of Rabbi Yeshua ben Hananya, can count every drop of water in the sea. Which what I assume means is they have incredible scientific knowledge above and beyond what the average person has. I don't know what it means to count every drop of water in the sea, but l'chara, it speaks to some kind of scientific knowledge, you know, that they had in depth. One of those two Talmidim was Rebbe Elazar ben Chisma. And Rabbi Yeshua tells Rabban Gamliel, you should know, these two Talmidim that you have, who are incredibly well-versed in scientific subjects, they can't make a living. So Rabban Gamliel, as soon as he comes back off the ship, sends for these two Talmidim, and he says, I want to give you jobs, I want to give you positions of authority. He was hoping to give them some parnasa in that way. They refused, they didn't think they were worthy of those positions, until Rabban Gamliel basically told them, do you think that by giving you a position of authority, I'm giving you a srara? Do you think I'm giving you some kind of authority? No, not at all. Avdus ani nosein lochem. If you're in a position of authority, you're a slave to the public. So don't get too uppity. I'm doing this to give you parnasa, but at the same time, I'm giving you a job. I'm not giving you just a title that you can glory in and ignore the work that you have to do. Serving the public is not about, you know, showing off. Serving the public is about being a slave to the public and, you know, taking care of every need that the public has. So it's an interesting composite picture. On the one hand, Rabbi Elazar ben Chisma has this incredible scientific knowledge. He knows how to count every drop of water in the sea. On the other hand, there seem to be these gaps, at least at some point in his life, in his basic shul skills. You know, he goes into shul, he's not quite sure how to lead the davening. Now again, granted, in those days where they didn't have sidurim, it was a much bigger deal to lead the davening than it would be nowadays. Again, you know, you could have a situation where even a Tana wasn't necessarily 100% comfortable leading the davening in shul. I don't think that would be quite analogous to our own day and age. Nowadays, you pick up the sitter, you just read what it says. But again, it's an interesting composite picture. Incredible scientific knowledge, gaps in his religious knowledge. So armed with that information, let's turn our attention back to this Mishnah. So we talked about what Kinnin and Pischei Nida are. Kinnin and Pischei Nida are gufei halachos, are fundamental halachos. On the other hand, tekufos v'gematrios parperos l'chochma. Figuring out the tekufos, the movement of the celestial bodies, and gematrias, which we have yet to translate, those are desserts of wisdom. They're secondary to the main wisdom, which is exemplified by things like Kinnin and Pischei Nida. What are tekufos and gematrios? So here we have an interesting debate represented on one hand by the Rav Avadim Bar Tanura, the Rav, and on the other hand by the Tosfos Yom Tov. Rav Avadim Bar Tanura writes that kufos refers to inyan mahalach hamazolos. It refers to having a sense of how the sun makes its way through the constellations. And others go on to explain that what that means is the ability to calculate the movement of the sun, the moon, the stars, insofar as it relates to setting the Jewish calendar. We know the Jewish calendar requires a certain amount of knowledge of astronomy. So trying to figure out when a leap year would be, trying to figure out when the new month begins, all of that is included in tekufos. Gematrios, says the Rav, is cheshbon ha'osios, being able to calculate the numerical value of letters. In other words, according to the Rav, gematrios over here means what we call today gematria. You know, the ability to, you know, to figure out the numerical value of a word in Chumash, a phrase in Chumash, and, you know, all the different aspects of gematria that go together with that. So according to that, Rabbi Elazar ben Chisma is saying, at least in the case of gematrios, gematria is nice, it's beautiful, but secondary, it's not, you know, it's not the fundamental aspect of Torah. Tosfos Yom Tov disagrees with both these interpretations, because he says the way we interpreted kufos as referring to trying to figure out issues of astronomy as they relate to the Jewish calendar, and gematrios as what we call gematria, says the Tosfos Yom Tov, I don't think that identification is correct. Because in both of those cases, the subject matter at hand is Torah. Gematria may not be as directly or as obviously Torah as, you know, let's say sitting down and learning a Mishnah Brura, but there are halachas that we learn out from gematria. Gematria is used to tell us that when a person becomes a nazir, stam nazirus ishloshem yom, the default position of when a person declares himself to be a nazir is that he's going to be a nazir for 30 days. And there are other examples where we utilize gematria not just to figure out how the name of the chassan and kala together with the numerical value of the simcha hall comes out to Dovin Melch Yisrael Chai V'Kayom. You know, it's not just that, but we learn halachas from gematria. Kufos, figuring out the Jewish calendar, I mean, that's a fundamental sort of thing. You know, it's not, it's Torah. It's Torah as much as anything else. So says the Tosfos Yom Tov and said, Tkufos refers to the calculation of astronomy that has no bearing on Torah whatsoever. Person's an astronomer, the science of astronomy. That's what Tkufos means. And Gematrios, says the Tosfos Yom Tov, is really just the word which we know from our own high school studies, if you think back to 10th grade. Gematrios means geometry. Literally, the word gematria, if you think about it, is really the same word as geometry. So Tkufos and Gematrios means the study of astronomy and the study of geometry is secondary in nature to the study of Torah itself. Truth is, Art School basically adapts this translation of the Tosfos Yom Tov. If you look in Art School's translation, Art School writes astronomy and mathematics, right? It focuses not just on geometry, but on mathematics in general, are like the seasonings of wisdom. Now, what's the point that Rabbi Elazar ben Chisma is saying over here? I mean, on the one hand, he's contrasting the study of Torah with secular disciplines. I think everyone would agree that Torah has primacy over secular disciplines. So what's the point that he's bringing out exactly? Comes the Vilna Gaon in his interpretation of this Mishnah, and he says as follows. Why is it that Rabbi Elazar ben Chisma chose to focus on kinnin and pischei nida of all aspects of halacha, to call them gufei halachos, to call them fundamental essential halachos? Says the Gra, the Vilna Gaon, because essentially what kinnin and pischei nida are, if you learn those sugyas, they're basically math sugyas. What a person basically would do when learning those sugyas, there's no lumdus, there's no conceptual analysis, there are no new Torah concepts. Basically, if you learn through the sugya of pischei nida, if you learn through the sugyas of kinnin, you're basically sitting there doing a lot of math. So a person may say to himself, this isn't Torah, this is math. Am I getting star for limud haTorah? Am I getting reward for Torah study when I'm sitting there and I'm just calculating, you know, the number of days that I would need to be able to be sure that a woman is a nida as opposed to a zava? Those are just calculations. They're secular in nature. Comes Rabbi Elazar ben Chisma and says, no. When math is used in the service of Torah, it becomes Torah itself. Kinnin u'pischei nida hein hein gufei halachos. Even though on a certain level, you might say it's just a math problem. But a math problem for the purpose of bettering our understanding of Torah becomes Torah itself. And conversely, if a person studies sciences without using the science to benefit Torah, but he studies science just as an end in its own right, that could be beautiful, but it's a parperes l'chachma. It's simply a condiment or a dessert for the main meal. Parperes is also sometimes used in Chazal in the sense of a condiment, and in that sense, the Tiferes Yisrael gives a very beautiful mashal. Says, you know, a typical condiment might be butter. So, you know, the Rebbe Elazar ben Chisma is saying that if a person studies secular studies without using it to somehow enhance Torah, it can be like butter. You put butter on bread, it's wonderful. But if a guy just takes a stick of butter and eats it straight, it's not so appetizing. You know, it's not so enjoyable. The secular studies are valuable when they're used as a parperes, when they're used as a condiment, when they're used as something which will somehow help out the Torah study in its own right. But if you were to keep them at arm's length from being able to benefit the Torah studies, so then as a parperes, as a condiment in their own right, they're not so helpful. Going back to our biography of Rebbe Elazar ben Chisma that we spoke about at the beginning of our session tonight, it would seem that Rebbe Elazar ben Chisma was uniquely qualified to talk about this relationship between Torah and secular studies. Again, the idea which it seems that he's bringing out is Torah studies that seem on the surface to be simply secular studies. The person studies sugyas and shas that are really just about making mathematical calculations. But mathematical calculations in the service of Torah are considered to be Torah itself. But conversely, the most profound sciences, which are not being used in the service of Torah, have value. But their value is like a condiment to Torah, because if you know, a condiment can make the Torah itself taste better, taste sweeter, be nicer. But the condiment in its own right, you know, it's a means to an end. It's not an end in itself. The condiment in its own right is not quite going to have, you know, a meaningful or a delicious taste. Rabbi Elazar ben Chisma was uniquely qualified, as we said before, to make this assessment, because, as we said at the outset, Rabbi Elazar ben Chisma had this unusual grounding in scientific knowledge, where the Gemara says about him that Hayodea Lispar called Tipo v'Tipo Shabayom, that he was able to count, he was aware of every single drop of water that existed in the sea. He had tremendous far-reaching scientific knowledge. A person who doesn't have scientific knowledge and he makes statements about the relationship between Torah and science and math and secular studies, okay, you don't know much about these things, so you know, who are you to talk about them? But somebody who does have that scientific knowledge, somebody who presumably did have mathematical knowledge and the like, so then his statements on this topic are considered to be significant indeed. I wish all of us a mazel tov on finishing Perek Gimel or Pirkei Avos. And be'ezus Hashem, we should be zochet to go on to learn many more prakim of Pirkei Avos be'iyon. Okay, Rabbi Chananya.